Sorry, I've broken all, you know, the fourth wall. We talk a little bit about 40K before we start talking about 40K.
Wempway has finally brought you here. Behold, Forge the Narrative.
Hey everybody, welcome to Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul, your host behind the Lost Souls podcast. I'm joined by Adam Camilleri.
Ethan, everybody.
Tanya Gates.
Hi everybody.
Red Powell.
Hey.
And a special guest like I promised from Twisted Dice, Ace Face, Mr. John Hickton. How are you?
Very good. Great to be here, guys.
We have a truly international, globe-spanning show this evening.
It really is. It's a one of a kind.
Spanning all sorts of different time spans at the same time. It is very, very early in the morning here.
So wait, we've got Canada, United States, UK, and Australia. Just like...
And Texas. I mean,
and Texas. Yeah, that was a good distinction.
Trying to get those international numbers up. Please tell your friends in your countries to listen. No, seriously, welcome, and thanks for everybody taking the time. Thanks for everybody listening. I'm doing some painting. I've actually gotten back on the horse painting this week. Really excited about that. Finished a Blood Angel chaplain, Primaris chaplain on a bike, and now I'm working on a pair of Dread Knights for a friend of mine. I know nobody's happy about that.
I've been still painting on my custodes and enjoying every minute of it.
Yeah. I paint these Grey Knights gold, so they're custodes-ish.
I like it.
Yeah.
Even though my custodes aren't gold.
No, I know yours aren't. Yeah. No, I like your color scheme.
I'm on the last of my 9 Outriders. So just finishing off, going for the rule of three, the nice crisp 9 Outrider blacks.
That's not bad. You know you'll be done. You have the squads.
Exactly. We'll be done.
Unless you want to play them at Death Watch. Then you gotta put...
Yeah, yeah. Like 12 more.
Wanted to have John on specifically to talk about Tyranids out of the Warzone Octarius book One Rising Tide. Tyranid players have been incredibly excited, and John, I won't steal your thunder, but you've been holding down Tyranids for a long time. What's got you interested, all jazzed up about this?
Oh, it's just, you know, there is so much in this book. It's incredible. It's just taken the level up to a whole kind of stratospheric rise. You know, it's a tough old gig playing Tyranids, and has been for some time. You really have to kind of eke every last inch of power from the book we've got, but this just takes everything that we've got and makes it that much better. So, you know, I could spend hours just going through every little bit of this, but there's, you know, bits in every single part of this, from warlord traits to stratagems to obviously the synaptic links. It's all just, there's no downside. It's great. And I've just come off the phone and a call with Alex McDougall, and we've been kind of absolutely gushing over the new Tyranid stuff. So yeah, it's definitely an exciting time to be a Tyranid player.
Tyranids have always been in a really interesting place since their book came out, because when it first launched, I mean, they've got like a 4-year-old book to all intents and purposes now, and it's been joked at a lot. But what can't be joked at is the fact that all the rules in that book are phenomenal. It's just that the units you're using them on have never been like the best of that type of unit, with exception of maybe Kraken Stealers, but you ended up having to put like 5 buffs, take a whole Swarm Lord, and then a bunch of CP to make them as good as, you know, say Shining Spears last edition. Whereas now I feel like there's a couple of units in there that just feel right. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, I suppose, you know, it is all, and I don't want to be negative about anything, but one of the big things with it is it hasn't revolutionarily changed what Tyranids do. What it's done is it's taken the stuff that us Tyranid players are playing with and suddenly just lifted them to a whole different degree. So, you know, from there's not a lot of new units that you're necessarily adding to your lists. It's just what you can do with the units that you've got at the moment. Suddenly you can compete. Suddenly, you know, the conversation that you're having around, you know, Shining Spears or whatever it might be, Orc Buggies or, you know, whatever kind of we're talking about, we now have a unit that can almost stand toe to toe with a lot of these really top tier units in the game, which, you know, that's the great thing. I suppose the downside of it is there isn't really any of those kind of units that you really wanted to kind of grab out of that book that you weren't using before, and you suddenly go, well, oh, now I can, now gargoyles have really got play, or, you know, that, you know, whatever it might be, I'm going to suddenly put that on the table. It's more of the same, but now you're really scary on the board.
Is it something along the lines of, like, folks have said, yes, we know, okay, Games Workshop, we get it, Hiveguard are cool.
Yeah, I mean, there is a bit of a meme around it. It is basically the book. You could change the title and just call it Hiveguard, you know, Warzone Hiveguard, and you probably wouldn't be far off the truth, because that unit is, I'd probably argue with most people to say that it's got to be in the top five units now in the whole of the game with the buffs.
Oh, wow. So
for what it does to help you win a game of Ninth Edition, I absolutely agree.
Well, let's get into the specifics if we can. Like, when you initially cracked open the book, what were the things that you focused on when I've got to do this, or this makes the thing I was doing before that much better?
Yeah. So the first thing really is the Warlord traits. And, you know, there's two Warlord traits that are absolutely game changing. So the one thing that Tyranids have really never had access to is rerolls. We just don't have them in the book. We've never had, you know, it's not been a case of take a tyrant or take this and suddenly you can get reroll ones or reroll hits. That just hasn't been a thing. Now we have a Warlord trait that just gives us the chapter master reroll. That in itself is just hugely, hugely powerful. It just takes everything and gives it that little bit of a tweak. So it's called Swarm Leader and you're never not going to take it. And when we're talking about Hiveguard, when we're talking about already a unit that hits on threes, to be able to then have a full reroll on it with all the other buffs that we can talk about is huge.
Yeah, let me read that out. So select one friendly Leviathan infantry, Leviathan beast, or Leviathan swarm unit within 9 inches of this warlord until the start of your next command phase. Each time a mod on that unit makes an attack, you can reroll the hit roll. It's not reroll failed hits or ones. It's you can reroll the hit roll.
Yeah, it's absolutely crazy. So much fun to have rerolls. It's just something I've never had in a Tyranid player. It's like you just watch all the Space Marine players rerolling everything. You're like, I want some of that. And the best thing is when you're playing someone, they go, so you must be able to reroll that, right? You've got a Tyranid Prime, or you've got a Hive Tyrant there.
There's a big bug standing right next to it. What's he doing?
Yeah, it just doesn't work. So, but probably the one that's as powerful as on a tier as is the strategic adaptation, which is the redeploy a Warlord trait. So this allows us to take two units at the beginning of the game and then redeploy them, which might sound like a small thing, but that ability to maneuver two units to a key place within your deployment zone can be absolutely game changing. And when we're talking about being able to either alpha strike even harder or being able to hide away if we need to, because we're not a particularly resilient army, that being able to redeploy is just absolute game changer.
That is something I think is one of the sleeper greats in this edition, is being able to redeploy after the fact.
So a lot has been made in this book. It's actually really interesting, like looking at the different design choices by G-Dub across Octarius. And maybe we'll talk about this later. But there was everyone is really going on about how much better that's made some of the core units that people are already taking. I think it's a really clever choice by G-Dub, rather than saying, without giving them a new codex, saying, here, try and make this whole new playbook work. But they've looked at the things that were already good and obviously looked at things that were already good. Like, okay, here's a cherry on top to the stuff you're already taking. Here's just a flat, straight line power boost to the lists that were already performing the best. Questioning to Ace Face, the only thing that people think that are missing from here is any real durability buffs. Do you think that's a big downside?
Yeah, absolutely. You absolutely nailed it, Adam. That's the one kind of problem probably in this book, is it has made us hit so much harder. But as far as taking a punch, we're no better with that. And we're still depending on the same kind of, you know, the same survivability that we've had previously. Which is definitely a downside.
And I would argue, though, and probably Red back me up on this, that the redeploy is the durability buff. That's the only thing in this book that actually increases durability, because you go like, okay, I was going to get nuked and dead turn one. Well, now at least I have a say before I lose like a third of my army to whatever's coming at me.
Well, you can shift things out of range, or shifts things into range if you needed to, depending on what the situation is.
Yeah, well, I mean, absolutely. I mean, the main use of this is generally going to be used on the two units. So what you're going to tend to do is you're with your Hive Guard, because they have a 36-inch range, You're going to either, you know, have them behind cover, so they're totally hidden. Obviously, they do ignore line of sight anyway. So that's great in itself. If you get that first turn and you absolutely need to lay the smack down, you can then redeploy them on the line, and then it's very difficult for things to be able to deploy outside of that. So that's the kind of the one big thing. And, you know, generally most of the builds that I'm looking at consist of two units of Hive Guard. So that's kind of both your Hive Guard. The other way you do it is with Gene Stealers, because that's the other thing that got a huge, incredible increase in power. And again, you'll do that with Gene Stealers. So if your Gene Stealers are very fragile, you know, they're probably going to be hiding behind, you know, terrain, making sure that they don't get taken out, because people are very, you know, they understand the speed that and the threat range that Gene Stealers have. But now you've got that ability to hide them.
Of being afraid of them is what has caused people to shoot at them.
Well, you should be even more afraid now, Paul, because they got even better.
What? How so?
So one of the big things is the synaptic link ability from the Tyranid Prime, which allows them to auto wound on sixes to hit. Because one of the things with Gene Stealers is before they were always really, really good at dealing with either elite infantry or just chaff. They would just go through them super easy. But as soon as they came against something that was a little bit tougher, and that they needed to really, you know, they needed to get those rends through to be able to do any damage, or they needed to get sixes anyway to get a wound against that T8. Now every hit roll of a six is auto wounding. It just means you're being able to stack that many more wounds on your opponent, which is like amazing. And then on top of that, if you're deciding to stack that with that warlord trait, you can fish for it. You know, particularly you've got a broodlord next to them, so they're hitting on twos anyway. So why not? You don't need to worry about, you know, just going for the you know, fours and fives or threes. You just literally pick up everything that's not a six, and then you're rerolling it again. And that's really only just kind of scratching the surface, because we also have a stratagem to explode those hits as well.
It's such an interesting, I think Gene Stealers are a great study on the kind of life of the modern game. If you wanted to look at, you know, how 8th edition and 9th edition have kind of ebbed and flowed, watching Gene Stealers rise and fall with other codex releases and meta changes and mission shift is actually a really interesting thing to look at, because they kind of had their way with the meta for a lot of 8th edition, and then completely, I don't want to say completely, like, died in the proverbial as soon as the Space Marines hit, but like as soon as you couldn't just like wrap, you know, with your overrun or whatever, wrap off a unit of scouts and survive, like they just couldn't use them anymore. They were a one and done mechanic. And now at least I feel like they can punch up into those things. Cause I mean, I remember when like things like Blade Guard and Centurions first made a splash, and you're just like, well, my Gene Stealers can't kill this thing. Like there's five of them and there's 20 of me, and I have no confidence that my 20 guys can kill those five dudes. And it's rough. It's real rough with all these buffs, with all these action. One of the really, really interesting things about the Tyranid book is it's kind of the last bastion of the double activation. It really is the last bastion of the double moves, the double fights, the double shoots. Because it's the only one I believe still has all three, right?
Yeah, I think so. Particularly when they're not specified to a particular unit. So quite often when they've tweaked them, they've made it still accessible but only to set units. With Tyranids, we've kind of got it everything still. So I think it's a holding placement, if I'm being brutally honest. I wouldn't expect those to stay once we do get a new codex. I would expect that it's probably a case of, at the moment, we have a little bit of the best of both worlds, but then we're not benefiting from, hopefully, an increase in the data sheets for a lot of the units that really, really need that love. So I think we're going to make the most. We're going to kind of dance in the rain at the moment and have some fun with these cool new rules. But ultimately, some of those will probably get turned on their head a little bit. It's just a prediction. Yep. But I mean, with the Gene Stealers, this is kind of where I differ from Alex. So Alex, obviously, if you know his list, he absolutely live and dies by Gene Stealers. They're his thing. I personally think they're a trap. In the hands of a really, really experienced player, you can get your points from them. But I tend to find that they killed a lot before. They were still, you know, and they'll kill kind of the same, if you like, almost most of the time. The trouble you've always got with gene stealers is where's your out? Where's your exit strategy with them? How are you going to keep them alive? I would warn people that don't get too excited with the crazy buffs that gene stealers have got. If you're going to go down that route, you really need to make sure that you take the time to really practice the nuances with using gene stealers, because they are not an easy unit to really harness that power. Once you get it down, they are incredible, but they can be extremely unforgiving. And a new player that goes, reads all the rules on paper and they go, wow, my gene stealers are just going to take down the world. We'll throw 20 gene stealers at their opponent tomorrow. They'll hit a screen, they'll kill the screen, and then they'll lose that unit straight away. And they'll go, well, actually, it wasn't that great after all.
Well, especially, so I've been kind of lamenting gene stealers' place for a while, simply because I've never found it palatable that you take a unit of 20 gene stealers, which is 230 points, and then to make that unit feel good, you have to take a 240 point swarm lord. Exactly. And then you're like, well, I've spent a quarter of my points to make one unit feel powerful or potent, as good as it should be. And so I've always been like, well, I'm just waiting for a list where gene stealers feel good and feel powerful without having to have that swarm lord. And that's what I want for them.
And I think you can do that now to a degree. You still aren't going to, you're not going to get that massive speed. But you have got with the use of a brood lord and the use of a tyrannid prime, you've definitely got, you know, a great kind of toolbox unit there.
I'm glad we kind of came back to it. Yeah. Well, I want to talk about the synaptic, what the synaptic link actually does. So we could, for folks following at home, and how you get it. Adam, do you have something else right there, though?
I was incorrect. I thought it was 230 points for 20 steelers. 260.
kick your way down, Adam.
Just to double down. Oh, not at all. I've got nothing but love for Tyranid players. I want only the best for them. It's a fun addition when they're good.
The synaptic link is one of the like the unit upgrades you can purchase with points. And then that gives them certain abilities to go on certain types of units. John, I don't know if you want to take it from there.
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the big things with this that's changed is with that kind of synapse web, if you like, where it used to be, used to have a 12-inch synapse web, and that used to give you more or less fearless. If you didn't have it, you'd obviously as well have to take some minuses, so you know you got minuses if you didn't shoot at the closest target or charge the closest target. There was a few kind of penalizing factors, but on the whole it basically made you fearless within 12. One of the big things with this new synapse link and this new synapse mechanic is you can have overlapping fields. So if you've got multiple synapse creatures that span across the board, you can spread this synapse ability across the table. So with these abilities that we get, they don't necessarily have to be standing right next to the unit. You want to give that ability. So what happens at the beginning of the command phase, you choose which unit you want to give your synaptic link ability to. And these are like upgrades that you buy before the game, just the same as you would upgrade a chapter master or apothecary or a chaplain. It's the same type of thing. So you pay 15 points before the game to give that synapse creature this synapse link ability. And then in the command phase, he can then pass that onto a unit to have that buff for that turn. And they're all really, really varied. They all have loads and loads of flavor. And they're not, there's only really one bad one. And that's the Neurophrope, which is a leadership debuff. And we all know leadership debuffs on the whole are not necessarily the strongest in the edition, but pretty much every single other buff is really, really effective.
The one you were talking about earlier is Unchecked Ferocity that goes on a Tyranid Prime, and it's each time a melee attack is made by a model in this unit, an unmodified hit roll of 6 automatically wounds the target.
Absolutely, absolutely. So a few of the highlight ones, as I said, they're all pretty good, but the standout ones are the Tyranid Warriors, because what they give you is they give you +1 to hit, and that's +1 to hit in both melee and in shooting, which, you know, is pretty much a no-brainer for a pretty cheap and cheerful little unit. So that's like a 60-point unit of 3 Tyranid Warriors. You know, stick a 15-point upgrade on them, and then they can pick a unit at the beginning of the turn, and that unit's going to get +1 to hit. So
can
when
they,
we're talking... Go on.
Can they pick themselves?
They absolutely can. Yep.
beautiful. Because that's what I saw. When as soon as I saw that one, I'm like, well, a unit of Tyranid Warriors, I think, is the good hybrid unit, right? They shoot good, they fight good. Well, supported, they shoot good if they got a prime or whatever. But all of a sudden, if they could just be a chunky unit with a couple of special weapons buffing themselves, that seems like a really good self-supporting beast.
Yeah, I think they're a fringe unit. I think they're a unit that can be okay. You know, they've got the decreasing damage stratagem that came in the old Blood of Baal book that's now been put into this book as well. So they can do reduce damage by one, which is nice. But they still do suffer a little bit from the fact that they do only have natively a 4-up save. They are only toughness 4. So, you know, eventually they will come a cropper to really, you know, the amount of sting that's in the game at the moment. But they definitely have a place. The other thing that they really struggle with still is they don't really have a weapon that does a lot of damage. You know, most of their weapons, you know, the bone swords, they're all going to be one damage. So they don't really have a way of really hammering home in combat, which is a bit of a shame. So I think they're kind of a fringe unit. You can do stuff with them, but they're not super, super strong. But I think where that ability becomes ridiculously powerful is if you put it on the Hive Guard. So those Hive Guard go from hitting on a 3 to hitting on a 2. You've suddenly got a huge amount of effectiveness there. You've just taken them up quite a lot. And that I think is where that strength really comes in.
Can't argue with that.
I think that's the standout. But then the two really interesting ones, which I think Tyranid players are very much you know, on the fence with, which way they go and what's good, what's bad. And I'd be really interested to hear what you guys think, is both the Maliceptor and the Tervagan. So the Maliceptor. So the Maliceptor gives you a on a wound roll of 6, it will give you an additional AP, and you can re-roll your damage roll. So that's what the Maliceptor does. And the Tervagan allows you, this is only for shooting, will allow you to re-roll your 1s and 2s to wound.
So you're talking about two pretty expensive models there, straight off the bat.
They're both about 170 points.
Let me talk just a slight bit about the synaptic link, like how you choose them when you're building your army, is that you're limited to a certain number of synaptic links allowed based on the size of the army. So a strike force 2,000 point army can have 3 synaptic link creatures in the army.
Yeah, absolutely. So you're working out. So you've probably got your Tyranid Prime. Sorry, not your Tyranid Prime. You've probably got your Tyranid Warriors as 1 minimum. And then if you're going Gene Stealers, you've probably got a Tyranid Prime. And if you haven't gone Gene Stealers and you're going to go double down on your Hive Guard, you've probably got 2 Tyranid Warriors, because you can still use the same buff as long as it goes on different units twice. So you could have 2 units of Warriors, both giving a 2+ on your Hive Guard. So then it really comes down to that final slot, what you go with. And that's where I think it's really, really interesting decision between the two, or none at all.
The Maliceptor's got a 4+ invulnerable save.
He does.
So he's big. And most of the Tyranids, you know, they've got that, I don't know, resting Tyranid face. RTF. So you want to shoot them all. Like, you think they're all just big and intimidating. So if you're going to have a big model on the table, I think I'd prefer to have an invulnerable save.
So the way I look at this comparison, so one of these is a HQ choice, that's being the Tervagan, and one of them's is it a heavy support for the Maliceptor?
It's an elite.
It's an elite for the Maliceptor. And then you've got toughness 8 on the Tervagan and toughness 7 on the Maliceptor, but the Maliceptor, like was noted, has the invulnerable save. They're both psykers. One of them doesn't shoot. The Tervagan can have a gun. The Maliceptor can't have a gun. And I don't know which one's better in combat. I think they're probably both pretty meek and blair, yeah?
Maliceptor only has 3 attacks. Not amazing.
Yeah, Tervagan's only 3 attacks. So they're actually they're actually very comparable. It's really I think it almost comes down to which case can you make the slot for? Are you waiting in heavy supports and you've got Lictors and Hive Guard taking up all your battalion slots? Or do you need the HQ slot taken up? I think they're both pretty stacked, though. Like, both of those slots are stacked as for Tyranids.
Yeah, the interesting bonuses that they both have. So to kind of give you kind of a bit of a kind of something else to think about. So the Maliceptor, one of its stratagems that it has is you can, in the shooting phase, you can you can pop a -1 strength to anything that shoots at anything within 3 inches of the Maliceptor, that shooting phase. So if you've got him at the back and he's playing a defensive role and is potentially buffing, say, Hive Guard or whatever it might be, that's actually an additional utility there, which is quite good. He also has a sort of a psychic pulse ability where potentially if you've got Thousand Suns that are redeploying right in your grill, you can do a kind of a psychic pulse that potentially hits multiple units, which is quite good as well. So that's kind of his additionals. The things with the Turvagan is you do have, if you're taking a bit of a gaunt carpet, again, which you probably are because you want to really screen those Hive Guard, because they're the thing that if they stay alive all game, they're just going to continue to annihilate your opponent's heavy hitting units and really cause mayhem. So you're going to want something to really make sure that nothing gets into your base. So if you've got a screen of gaunts, what the Turvagan can do is every turn, he can replenish 10 gaunts a turn back onto that unit. The other thing that the Turvagan can do is the Turvagan can take a relic that gives him minus one to wound.
Oh, yeah.
So he's a toughness 8, 13, 14 wound creature, and you can then give him a minus one to wound. So can be quite a survivable creature.
We've never seen that in the game. We've never seen something with toughness 8 with minus one to wound yet. If anybody knows what a Keeper of Secrets is and you've played somebody who's playing three of the things, you've run into what a minus one to wound toughness 7 monster is. This is a toughness 8 one. Essentially, las cannons, you know, don't get the job done here. You need to get you almost need to just punch it down with power fists or thunder hammers because you're not going to get enough shots. Or you just need to have something like Vanguard that doesn't care about the wound roll. Well, who needs a wound roll? 5s to hit. I personally prefer the Turvagan because I think it adds more to your list than a Maliceptor does. Like, as in, you know, you're replenishing Gaunts, you still get a psychic phase. You're making the Gaunts better, which you're probably already taking, whereas the Maliceptor just kind of exists. It kind of just doubles down rather than adding a whole nother element. But, like, I don't think that's the wrong choice.
No, I think y'all made a good case for that, actually, the Turvagan.
Well, exactly, because you just want to, you want people to try and kill it at that point. You're just like, ha ha, you know, this buff is okay, so I don't mind if it dies, but I really want you to try and remove it. I would love for you to waste time trying to remove it. And the best case scenario is they try, they fail, and, you know, she goes about her merry way for them.
Yeah, you got two squads of gaunts still alive or something else alive that was going to be dead because they spent all their time firing at the Turvagan.
Well, isn't there a flesh borer stratagem for mortal wounds?
Yes, but so the Turvagan doesn't have that. So the Turvagan's
The
gaunts do. Yeah, absolutely. But it is, you know, it's a bit situational because, you know, their range is fairly limited.
Yeah.
It can be good. Before we move on, because I think that's a really good one to cover, because I think that's quite a fun stratagem to talk about, because I think there's some other utility there. But before we kind of pass on to that last thing, the other thing I was just going to just add with the Maliceptor is what happens when you go into Dreadnoughts or you go into Death Guard or you go into anything that reduces damage by one and you want to maximize the output on those Hive Guard. They're D3 damage. So when you've got something that allows you to re-roll damage roll in certain matchups, that can be game winning in itself, particularly if that's spread across the whole army.
Yeah.
That I keep coming back to.
I do want us to point out, if G-Dub did this on purpose, it's one of the biggest and most hilarious trolls of the last half a decade. So all through 8th edition, everyone complained to high heaven about D3 damage weapons. And so G-Dub decided to give us all 2 damage weapons and then introduce a horrific amount of minus one damage into the game. And now we're all begging for our D3 damage weapons back. It's freaking hilarious. It's so funny.
It's cyclical. Yeah, there's...
It is. If there is a designer at G-Dub who's just chuckling, you know, hands on his tummy, ha ha ha, got you all. Well done to you, sir. You did get us all. You got us all.
Yeah. So did you want to touch on the bio-adapted Bora grubs, Adam?
try and say that 3 times fast. But yes, yeah. I do. I
think. Well, let's do it. And then let's, if you wouldn't mind, before we hit the break, hit us with a brief just rundown of your list that you might be taking to your next event.
Absolutely, absolutely. So the bio-adaptive Bora grubs, easy to say for some, is what it does is on a wound roll of 6 for flesh borers or flesh borer hives, it does a mortal wound in addition to the normal damage. So it's 1 CP on flesh borers, or it is 2 CP on flesh borer hives, and it's to a maximum of 6 mortal wounds. So the interesting little thing that you can do with this is if you use it on the flesh borer hives, so that's the Tyrannophex, that's the Turvagan's kind of cousin, That's a creature with, it has 20 shots, strength 6, AP dash. It will cost you 2 CP to make them do mortal wounds on 6s. If he stands still, he can do 40 shots. So that's 40 strength 6 shots with 6s doing mortal wounds to wound. But then you can crack
the strategy. No cap on that either. Like, it's not limited to a number of only 6 mortal wounds?
Only 6 mortal wounds. So okay, just 6 mortal wounds is the maximum. Yeah, it is. But then what you can do is crack the stratagem on top of that to mean that everyone that goes through doesn't do 1 damage, it does 2 damage. So this is the Tyranids version of the Volkite Contemptor.
It is. Yeah, it really is.
But it does cost you 4 CP.
It's not. Well, yeah, exactly right. It's not that expensive either. And he's another. That's another big Gribbly with toughness 8 and a bunch of wounds.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So just another little fun one. And I think there's quite a lot of power there. Like 40 shots is at strength 6 is nothing to be sneered at.
Well, mate, the amount of people, the two best armies in the game are both working their infantry off toughness 3 chassis. That seems good. It seems respectable at least.
Absolutely.
For the second volley, can you declare to shoot that as something else, or does that have to go at the same target?
Yeah, you can. So it's the same as the Exocrines, 2 sets of 6. So yeah, if you stand still, shoot the first volley, see what it does, and then shoot again in something else, which is useful. The only downside is it is only 18 inches, and there is no way of making him move and then still get it to shoot twice, because even when you use onslaught, the wording doesn't quite work like that, which is a bit of a shame. So there's no way of speeding him up.
I hope that's something they change in the next book, because like they gave the Exocrine that there's some CP you can chuck on the Exocrine to make it counter stationary and shoot twice. All they would have had to have done is just chuck Tyrann effects next to that as well, and that would have felt really good.
Keyword Tyrann effects or Exocrine. Yeah.
But another huge troll is you ask how many Tyranid players have still got flesh borer hives available for their Tyrannifexes, because I tell you they are all sitting on high flying hive tyrants
Twinling Devourers, and everyone's got what, the rupture cannons on their Tyrannifexes?
Yeah, or the acid sprays. They're the only things you've ever seen on a Tyrannifex. So it's kind of like, it's quite entertaining. But yeah.
That's funny. Will you mind running down your list just quickly, and then we'll take a break?
Yeah, definitely. So this is the list that I'll be taking this weekend. So I've actually got a great opportunity, because it's the cutoff for this tournament was like literally this Saturday just gone. So it will be one of the first opportunities to see the new Tyranids in action. So it should be pretty cool. So I've gone for just one. I've kept it simple, and I've gone for just one battalion of Leviathan. I've gone for a Hive Tyrant. He's got wings. He's got the monstrous size upgrade. So basically he does an additional damage on his Scything Talons. So his Scything Talons will do 4 damage straight. He gets an extra attack. And he's got Toxin Sack, so on 6s he'll do 5 damage flat on his talons. He's also got the -1 damage as well. I've then got a Neurophrope. The Neurophrope will have all the Warlord traits because you can double stack them, which is cool. Then I've got 20 Termagants with Flesh Borers. I've got 20 Termagants with Devourers, because Devourers are crazy. I've got 10 Termagants. Another unit, and then I've got 2 units of warriors. Both those warriors will have the synaptic link for the +1 to hit. 2 big juicy units of hive guard, both 6. 2 lictors, because they are action monkeys. A maliceptor, so you see what way I went. And the maliceptor's got the focal essence.
You can change the Turvagon and be fine. That was maliceptor's was my initial pick as well, but y'all talked me into the Turvagon.
There we go.
It really comes down to whether or not what your troop section looks like. If your troop section have a big unit of gaunts in it, yeah, go for it. If you're going like double steelers, double warriors, then you probably don't.
Yeah, and then the list is kind of finished off. I have got then 3 units of 3 Raveners. One of the really cool things with Raveners is they're so quick, move 12. You can double move them as well, just using the standard stratagem. So they're super cheap, great action monkeys. And there is a stratagem in here that we didn't cover that can also give them objective secure. So you can literally bang these guys forward, cap an objective, do an action. They're just really good for it. And then the list is finished off with a Tyrannifex with the flesh borer hives as well for a bit of fun. I've also got some reinforcement points to spend on either bringing back a unit of Termagants, but more than likely to use the spore mines to give me that kind of extra defense in the middle of the board to stop anybody getting at my base. And that's the list.
It's got some tools. Yeah,
it's got a lot of stuff. I love seeing Ravenous back. Raveners and Warriors, my two favorite looking and feeling units in the Tyranid army, and they just haven't been a thing for so long.
The OGs.
I know. Okay. Red Terror, new model. Let's do it.
Please.
Oh, well, thanks for sharing. All right, folks, we're going to take a break. Then we're going to come back and talk about, should we still be playing 2,000-point games?
Oof.
See you in a minute.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games, Inc. Please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com. And don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
Hey, everybody, we are back. Still got everybody here. That was a really cool rundown on Tyranids.
It's going to be some spicy inclusions. We were just talking off screen about some of the good and bad matchups. Man, they got some good matchups in some of the into some of the better lists. Maybe not the best lists, but I think they're going to make a splash for sure.
Fingers crossed.
I was just taking notes because pretty soon I'm going to have to face Alex McDougal. So I don't know how his stuff works now. You know,
is that, yeah. you'll be ready for him. So.
Well, you know, maybe. No, I won't.
She's got, don't shoot Turvagon.
Underline.
So what I want to talk about here is, I mentioned that, you know, like, should we be playing 2,000-point games anymore? And there's been a lot of chatter, you know, from folks that either, you know, play competitively or in tournaments or whatever, that feel that certain lists have an advantage out there right now. Certain codexes have an advantage. Seem to be somewhat disgruntled with some of the scenes, probably unless you are playing one of those factions. And I can relate. But one thing that I do, and what we've always done on the show, is that if there's a real dominant list or whatever, I don't necessarily always want to play that list, but I try to go real deep into whatever codexes that I have at my disposal and figure out a way to crack those lists. And
yeah,
in the event that that's difficult or, you know, maybe, you know, or impossible — I don't think it's impossible, by the way, especially after stuff, you know, we just spent 30 minutes talking about stuff that seemed really compelling about Tyranids, and that's a faction that, sorry, John, that people have not been super hot on the last several months. Yep.
So whenever you analyze the meta of anything, like of any game, you could do this for an e-sport, you do this for, you know, the competition of your NFL or hockey team, whatever. You look at the meta of it, and there's always four positions you can inhabit in any meta. You can be in the meta, as in making up the bulk of what people are looking at, e.g. in this current stuff, you'd be that would be playing, like, always playing the best of what you can play without any, you know, adhesion to, you know, faction preference or whatever. You just play, oh, whatever the best thing is, no matter what faction it is, you play that.
This that's is the most efficient ever. It's proven. Yeah. I'm taking that.
Yeah, that's playing on the meta. You can play ahead of the meta, as in try and be the thing that those people in their best list need to beat in order to win. As in, we call that — some people call that gatekeeper. I call it playing ahead of the meta. You can play off the meta, or into the meta, which is what Paul was just talking about, looking at the things that he has that he can do with his specialist faction that goes well into what everybody else is taking. And then you can be behind, which is kind of where a lot of the kind of 8th edition factions are right now, if you wanted to look at that example. Like, things like Craftware Elder are behind the meta, as in they just don't have the tools to keep up. It's always interesting to decide where you want to inhabit. And of course, there's probably more than that, but those are just the ones that, when I analyze something, those are what I look for. Like, who's trying to be ahead of it? Who's playing inside it? Like, who's inhabiting, who's, you know, wants to be in there or wants to go into those guys, and who just can't keep up.
I don't want to claim to have a solution on this, but what I do, I just want to mention that we were talking during the pre-show, we do a little bit of warm-up before we start recording. Sorry, I've broken all, you know, the fourth wall. We talk a little bit about 40K before we start talking about 40K.
It's so funny. Sometimes we talk just as much about the show as we do on the show. Like, we'll some just end up.
Yep, that's correct.
Yeah, yeah. it's not a show. Everybody get your bingo cards out. Click off, tick off the Adam gets shanked by Red. you know, congratulations today. You're a winner. But yeah, smaller points games keeps coming up. Should we be paying 2,000 points? I'll hit a puzzle. Red, you want to shank me? You can have a say, mate. What do you think about
so let me go over a couple of things. So in the actual rule book, there are multiple ways to play Warhammer 40,000 supported within the rules. The multiple ways are actually supported in all the supplements. They're supported in White Dwarf. They're supported on the community article. So you know, if anyone were to choose to play one of these other variants, there are, you know, people that would sympathize and would probably like to play the same thing that you are doing, whatever you choose to do. But one of the things that we almost never look at is the Battle Forged Army section that has four different ways to muster your forces here. Combat Patrol, which I played Combat Patrol. I don't know if y'all remember, was it earlier this year? I think it was earlier this year. I actually went to a Combat Patrol tournament. Played 500 point games. So Combat Patrol is up to 500 points. Incursion is 501 to 1,000 points. Strike Force is 1,001 to 2,000. And then Onslaught is 2,001 to 3,000. So those are big sections of points that you could live in. The other big thing that changes is the command points. So in Combat Patrol, you start with 3 command points, Incursion 6, Strike Force 12, Onslaught 18. I don't think anybody is going to advocate wanting to go bigger into the Onslaught level for, you know, routine match play. But what if we looked at going smaller?
So I think it's a huge deal. Or go ahead, Tanya. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, you say not very many people play those smaller point games, but I end up playing them quite a bit. Obviously not in events, because there's not a lot of events going on around me in my area, but quite regularly I play 1,000 point games, and I find them just as tactically robust, and sometimes even more so, because you don't have redundancy built into your list. So your decision-making in general has to be a little bit more spot on. I think you really feel it when you start losing those units. So I actually really enjoy smaller point games.
Another thing that changes quickly for I yield it to Red is the number of detachments that you can have. So in a Combat Patrol, one detachment, Incursion is 2, Strike Force 3, Onslaught 4.
Yeah. I mean, and so along that line, so I mean, I'm with you, Tanya. You know, in the last couple of years, and as things have rolled out, particularly in the age of COVID and just other things going on, I've been playing 1,000 point games as well, and a lot of time been playing it in Crusade matches. And that's not to say that those aren't competitive. There's just other elements to it. But to get to what you're talking about, Paul, and you know, detachments are decreased. You have fewer CP, and the battlefield is a different size at 1,000 points. There's so many factors that adjust into that it does quite a number on some of the game mechanics and how things are set up. And fairly to Adam, as we were actually having a full-blown conversation before the show, and we were going back and forth and talking about it. It is something to be said about the size of the game and what can go into it. And so when you look at, you know, now as we talk about it, how many detachments you can actually have, how much CP you have, you know, you can't build that as much as you want to into your list. You can't have all of those extra warlord traits or relics necessarily to a point with the detachments that you're taking. It costs so much or however much going into it. And then really when you look at the table size, it's half of the normal table, right? It's not 60 inches, it's 30 inches. And so that does a whole other number on melee ranges, you know, of shooting profiles, psychic powers, so on and so forth. And so it can drastically step up certain units versus other units. And there's an argument, I think, that's out there against the smaller point values is the ability to build out some of these tougher elite armies. What allows us to overwhelm some of the things like Deathwing and some of the Custodes builds and things like that is our ability to mass other forces. I do think that, you know, AdMech and Orcs, as we've talked about them, definitely take advantage. I mean, even Drukhari with some of their lower costed but still efficient units take advantage of larger point sizes by being able to just throw that much volume into the mix.
And the third detachment, so, you know, all Drukhari players have the three detachments covering all their bases.
That's right.
I don't know that smaller points are going to disrupt any of that efficiency. I'm not coming to this with a solution or saying this is the answer. I wanted to inject it into the conversation.
Yeah, I think it does, you know, it does change the degrees of efficiency to the different lists. You know, even talking about the Tyranids, and we were talking about the two units of hive guard, heavy hive guard. That's a lot of points when you start thinking about 1,000 points when you're at half the value of what you had. But those two units of hive guard could clear off a lot of other armies. And when you consider the board size and everything, it becomes quite drastic. But I do think that there is something to it. And I think that there's some consideration that is worthwhile in saying, you know, 2,000 points takes 3 hours, 2.5 to 3 hours to play. 1,000 points, it's, you know, it's not just cutting the game in half. There's still plenty of game to be played, but it is faster, and you can get through games to a certain extent in a more rapid fashion. You know, you're not spending 9 hours a day playing games, going back and forth. You're suddenly down to in some degrees, maybe a more manageable number for some cases. And so there's just a lot to be considered in that. And I go back to this because, of course, I do enjoy and love playing Crusade. And there's so much to it that you're playing these tactical throwdowns. And I don't feel like it's run away with itself by any means in a lot of cases. And so I've had a great time with that. And I appreciate the opportunity to be able to talk about it because I think it's something absolutely worth considering for a lot of people. It doesn't always have to be 2,000 points. You know, I think back to, we go back in time and look at, we did 1850 for so long. I keep thinking of, and it, I do think that it is something, you know, the old Ardboys tournaments were bigger, badder, crazy armies just thrown down. And I think that that's something that people do appreciate about the game. And I'm not by any means saying we should like completely step away from that. I think that it's just, it's, as you mentioned, Paul, and that your experience with 500 points, it's just a different way to approach the game in a certain way. And it's not something that should be so easily set aside just because we've, quote unquote, that's how we've always done it for ninth edition.
Well, I agree with Tanya too, is that I didn't feel like my tactical decisions were being compromised. Like I still had to play the game. You're still playing a game with, you know, ideally equally matched resources, trying to score objectives, trying to use your pieces.
Absolutely.
So the off screen, the first when we threw this topic out, the first thing I was considered was, I think we would, because I mean I don't know a huge amount about these the different restrictions in this size game, but the first thing that came to mind was like, well then I don't think I should be able to take a Vanguard spearhead or Outrider. I think I should just be stuck with a patrol and a battalion, right? To feel like we're back to CAD, you know, 6th and 7th edition. Because all of a sudden I was like, well, I can just take a Custodes army with 3 Talamons, and on a smaller board, what are you going to do? Like, did you bring 3 units of Retributors with all multi-melters? No? Well, I guess I'm fine. Off we go.
The combat patrol term and I did put a restriction in there. I think, I can't remember if I had to take a patrol detachment, but I definitely couldn't take a super heavy detachment.
Well, it should be like I like the idea of a rule of 2, you know, for smaller games. And even maybe you get sub 500, you get like a rule of 1 or something. You know, of course, not including, you know, the same as what we do now, troops and transports and things. But I mean, that kind of stuff makes sense. And at those points levels, I mean, I used to really love when I first started playing 40K in late 6th, early 7th or mid 7th, you know, I played in a bunch of like 850, 1,000, 1,350 point events. It was a really cool way of not only building a new army every year, because that's part of the kind of the fluffier circuit in Victoria was all based around kind of every year, if you wanted to, you could build a new army through a bunch of events. You go to a 500 pointer, 850, 1,000, 1,200, 1,500, 1,750, then all of a sudden you get 1,850.
That's pretty cool that the play group, by the end of the year. So, I mean, the community supports it, because that's really what it ultimately comes down to, is that we, when we talk about 2,000 point 40K right now, that's something you can do at any game store, anywhere on the planet, roll in, 2,000 points match play, everybody knows what's up. And,
yeah.
And
yeah.
There's a lot of value in that.
I mean, how about we split the difference? I mean, you know, really interesting. I think, you know, it's a great kind of debate. I think one of the biggest issues and dilemmas that you have going to 1,000 points is it's such a dramatic different points level that if you were going to use that for competitive play, you almost would need that to bed in as a new meta, and a new meta might create its own issues and dilemmas all of itself, because as players try and break the game and find a new way of playing it, you get kind of almost like a whole different problem almost, or a different, you create a whole different agenda. Maybe there's kind of almost a compromise, because people still want to play with their toys, their stratagems, have some more variety, but maybe sort of 1500 does exactly what Tanya's saying and kind of reduces that ability to take loads of redundancy. And, you know, do you, if you were playing 1500 points, really second guess yourself? Actually, I can't afford 2 units of Hive Guard, or I can't afford 6 flyers for Admech. But it makes you probably a little bit more tactical in your decisions. It speeds up the games, but it still falls into that next bracket. So you still get the same options to play with stratagems. You still got some flexibility, and it maybe doesn't change the whole dynamic and the meta of the game completely. So it's a different game, but it still kind of maybe freshens things up and makes things maybe slightly less, you know, oppressive in certain kind of armies and certain kind of matchups.
1500 points is still Strike Force. You're still in that Strike Force category.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So still 12 command points, still same amount of detachments.
You're playing on the same board size, which opens up the space quite a bit. And I think that does something for it as well.
Just another option. For now, they just confuse things even more.
look, I mean, we're completely hypothetical at this point, you know, because I don't think anything is changing what major events are going to do for their points. But what is a lot more easier to do is choosing how individuals play, or how you might want to play at the game store if you are frustrated with, you know, the pace or scope of those match play events at this point in time.
I think that going back to Adam, you're talking about the four different positions that you were considering, and I think that not many people, correct me if I'm wrong, but when John Lennon showed up to the table with Ultramarines amidst Drukhari and everything, I don't think that people really saw that coming. I think that a lot of people would agree, you kind of expect that from someone who has devoted themselves as much as he has and his team to the game to be able to find a working, viable angle with maybe something that wasn't considered the most obvious meta piece. And so I think that as you adjust some of the parameters to the game, and we've talked about different formats, right? Highlander formats and things like that, and other ways to approach it. And I think that that's something right now we say that, going back to that final position you mentioned of the armies that are just not, don't have the competitive tools, in some cases, and this is where I think I'm just bringing up so many of our conversations, Adam. I feel like I owe it to you. when we go to this, you know, we talked, you asked me about these supplements, the campaign books, and how, you know, of course, you know, we're not going to get anything more than Tyranids and Astra Militarum right now outside of this campaign book for a hot minute. I'll be surprised if we do, I guess I should say. But look at just what we were talking about with Tyranids, and now with where we're at and what some of those changes are bringing in that, we say there's no answer to Admech. There's no answer to orcs. That's that's what some people say. That's a statement that has been put out there. However, I'd challenge anybody that there's probably something out there that is going to throw someone for the loop, that's going to get inside their decision cycle to such an extent that they didn't see it coming. When I show up to the table with whatever, you know, 6 squads of full up white shields or something like that. Now they might all be like traitor guard models, but you know, you got to get them off of the table first. And for some people that maybe not, you know, for gene stealers, that might not be an issue, but for some of the other armies, that might be a much more significant issue. So it's just, I was just playing on that. I think that's a great way to kind of approach the game. And some of these formats could really unlock some of the different approaches that armies could take advantage.
Well, exactly right. And a perfect example with that Ultramarine list that came out for a while, because that was what I would call playing ahead of the meta. You already know what exists, and then you're like, well, I'm going to push them, and I'm going to play ahead of them, and I'm going to be the thing that they need to be in order to, you know, to maintain their spot all of a sudden. It's like you skip having the belt. You know, you don't have – they're the world champion, and you're like, well, I'm going to take the – I'm going to grab this brass ring before you do. Like, whatever. I'm going to be the one people are talking about, even though I'm not the champion, you know? A great example as well with the white shields. Like, I mean, the white shields feel – okay at 2,000 points, but man, also if you start talking about white shields of, you know, 1,500, 1,000 points, and you can put 60, 90 bodies back on the table, some of which, you know, through some clever interactions could have extra saves, invulnerable saves, or, you know, borderline fearless, that's a whole different game, especially on a smaller table. You're like, well, you can't avoid all these dudes. You can't run around them. You can't circumnavigate them. You can't isolate them like you can on a bigger table. And yeah, they just start to run away with things. I would like to point out, I don't know if you guys can see this when you, this is how I'm seeing top down, looking at the Octarius book in its entirety.
We can't see anything. This is a podcast.
Dang. All right. Adam makes a poor analogy. Tick that off your bingo card as well. So for Guard got an old play style becoming relevant. So well, essentially not even old play style. Got a brand new style that they couldn't play in 9th edition. All of a sudden they got that added to their playbook, e.g. the conscripts again. Because they've been really bad in this edition so far. They just haven't done anything. They've just exploded essentially. Anybody, half pluff, blow your conscripts down, they're all dead. And then for Deathwatch got given a reason to play with the army that you built in 8th edition. In 8th edition, Deathwatch, you could only play, you only had kill teams, transports, HQs, and Corvus Blackstars. That Army of Renown is the exact 8th edition Deathwatch army list, and it gave you a huge reason to play with your old collection. And then Tyranids, they gave you a reason for your current collection to be better. It's almost like they went through all these factions and was like, well, we want to give all these players a reason to keep using their models and a reason to be excited about what they've got. And I think like did you guys see that the same as I do, or am I completely off the rails?
I don't know if it's intentional or not, but it certainly is it's a benefit. It's a boon, I think.
So we're going
to
say,
I didn't know there was anything else in that book, Adam, to be brutally honest. There's something else in there as well?
No, not really. There are fortifications and
some bastions. Don't worry about it. Don't you be downplaying the bastions. It's the best unit in this book.
But yeah, do you guys see that as well? Like, it seems like there's actually been I don't want to attribute it too well, but I could see that there could be an actual concerted effort to push people in different directions. The 8th edition Death Watch list. That seemed really plain to me when I saw it.
Let me go back to the other thing, is that I don't know about pushing people in different directions, but again, there's just all different kind of ways to play this game. And that's...
Apologies. Different directions was a poor choice of words. More like different incentives.
Oh, sure. But I mean, I'm just trying to state there are all these options with the current meta of match play has us focused on two or three things and ignoring lots of other things in the game, including different ways to approach it, different ways to muster your forces.
Yeah.
But with that, like you were saying, it's like when the benefit of when wave serpents were still good, you know, from one Eldari to another. I see that as, I don't know if it's a happy accident or a coincidence or whatever, but I always get real jazzed when I get to go deep into my own collection with stuff that's still good.
Well, that was a thing in 8th edition, wasn't it? Like, because the game was changing so frequently, FAQs, points adjustments and whatnot. I mean, the start of 8th edition, I think you and I had a discussion on your show, Paul, about you feel almost like you should just have it's no longer a huge deal to get like one good, you know, what was 1850 point list, and you're going to be able to play it as it was for, you know, 2 years or so, which is what it kind of was in 8th edition. Like, Riptide Wing came out, and then the Tau players just played Riptide Wing until 8th edition came out from 7th. But in 8th edition, that wasn't the case. You're more like you're being told, hey, you know what, you should probably get like maybe 4,000 or 5,000 points of this faction, and then you can probably move on to something else. And then you will always have something to play in that faction. You know, you'll never feel like, oh, there's just nothing to do here, nothing to see here. And I feel like that's what I thought this supplement was. Okay. It was two factions, Guard and Nits, who may have been bottoming out with options or the power of the options that they had, and both just got like a whole new fresh breath of life blown into them, which was beautiful.
I kind of miss Riptides.
I don't. Nah. Never mind. Never, never, never. Never, never, never. Nope.
No one else misses Riptides? What about, what's the other like mid-size suit that came out that you couldn't shoot at?
Broadside.
The Ghost Keel. I always thought they looked kind of cool. I don't know. I don't have
They do look cool. They look great. I think they've got some good, some okay weapon systems. I say good weapon systems because I'm just thinking of what they can do to orcs. But they look great.
What actual model looks bad in the Tower range? Vespid, maybe. But most of the models are still phenomenal. Still look extremely good. I'd see one thing I'll argue, the original stealth teams I liked better than the current ones.
The ones that have like the Tau helmets.
Yeah.
Like they don't have like the full like enclosed thing. Yeah. I was interested to see how they moved that direction. from them. I think the old school ones are cool.
Yeah, same.
Yes, the stealth suits now look more, I don't know, weird. Like they stand out more.
They're like, you know, 80% noggin, 80% head helmet, you know? I see Darth Helmet from Spaceballs.
Well, that's the technology. It makes it where you don't see
it. Can go in. Yeah. If the helmet is big enough, they won't see it at all, boys.
Well, I know we danced around this. Would y'all consider playing a different, like the incursion level?
Absolutely, dude. Absolutely. I mean, in fact, I've been wanting to start a new army for a while and had a couple of false starts. Like a couple of smaller events. It might just be like the little nostalgia kick I need to like really, you know, maybe start knights, start. See, that's the thing. Yeah. Forget I said knights. Insert Necrons where I said knights, because playing knights at like 1,000 points could get a bit rough.
And I don't know. I haven't sat down to build an Agmech list at 1,000 points. I don't know if that changes anything. I don't know how many buggies can you get in a 1,000 point list? Probably fewer, yeah. Planes.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, how many more of your six starting CP you're going to give up to have the two or three detachments needed to get all your planes in?
Yeah.
Cool. You can have planes. No CP if you have planes.
Yeah. No, it's there's all these little moving parts. It's going to be cool to, I mean, it'd be cool to theater to the mind kind of thing. See if it actually does anything. As I have played at the 500 point level. That's when Chaos Spawn were just so good.
Godly.
The kings. Well, kings of the table.
I feel like some factions actually, some of the, like the poorer factions at the moment, the struggling factions at the moment would actually, I think, do way better at smaller points. Like, I think guard would be amazing at smaller points. Just as a guard player, I look back and I'm like, man, like the one payload manticore, one tank commander at 1,000 points, that'd feel amazing. Couple of Scion units. Awesome.
That pretty much explains my list that I played last weekend. And it was awesome. It was really good. Yeah. I played into my friend's Drukhari, and it just seems a lot killier at 1,000 points. Just like deleting stuff off the table, and felt really good.
You feel like you traded better, like your units matched up better? Yeah. I mean, this is anecdotal, yeah. You know, and I will say
at 1,000 points though, Drukhari are still really good because the table's so much smaller, so they're just everywhere.
They can get there quick. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So you have to be really careful about your movement against factions like that.
I mean, that's you know, playing Khorne, of course, and I sit there, and that was one of the factions I played with Crusade. So at 1,000 points, the ability for something that can assault and charge or advance and charge, it can get, I mean, turn one is almost assured in some cases.
Yeah, absolutely. It's awesome. Yeah, see, exactly what I was saying. That stuff just, I think, breathes a lot of life into a lot of obscure options. And like you talk about the Drukhari match, like Tanya just said, and if my tank commander in my payload manticore kill two raiders at 1,000 points, chances are there's like four or five more raiders, and that didn't make any difference. But at 1,000 points, if they kill one each and you only had three, that's huge.
Look, I'm gonna commit. By this time next week, I will have played a smaller point game than 2,000.
Oh, did I mention my home state? I haven't played a game of 40K since June, guys, because of lockdowns, and we just opened up. I'm gonna play, like, by the time we record next, I will have played about 10 games of Warhammer. And the first 10 games, the first 10 games of Warhammer I played in near damn 4 months. It's crazy.
Nice. Well, I'm looking forward to the report. Well, that's the end of our show, everybody. This has been a good one. I think we have hopefully breathed some life into the Tyranids for players out there.
Mm-hmm. Should have.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah,
well John, I want to hear about how you did on your tournament. So you may at least we'll give an update next week. Or
I feel under pressure, Paul. I feel seriously under pressure now.
Hey, you said you're only weak, you know, or struggling to a couple of lists. So just dodge
those.
Don't
tell everyone that.
Yeah, this will be out by then as well. And you match up into one of those lists and you beat it and you're like, liar. Yeah.
Nice. Oh, well, please don't forget to like, share, subscribe, leave us 5-star reviews, leave some comments and everything. It's been a pleasure. We'll see you all next week.
See you.
See ya.
Bye, everybody. Bye.
Our craft worlds are sentient beings. These hosts are not. Better luck next time, monkeys!